Welcome, everyone, to our latest episode of the Jet Blast podcast. And been a little while, unfortunately, airplanes, life, everything's kind of been getting in the way. One of us is usually seems to be gone, so we haven't been as good. But we keep trying. Fortunately, we have a great pool of guests that we just need to get on the schedule and keep going. But it's been a little while. Hey, Andy. So, okay. Last time I think we were talking, I think you've gotten rid of the goats. We're not on goats anymore. I think we're done with the goats. Are we going to do goats again?
I don't know. I'm trying to figure out if I could start the little side hustle because there's so much demand in my town here. Once people saw and they read my article I wrote in the newspaper about it, they were like, we want to do it. So the farmer is booked out already all the way through next year. So I might be buying.
You're going to become a goat herder? Is that what I'm hearing?
I'm a goat herder as a little.
What does Lindsay think about becoming a goat herder?
as long as I take care of them, but that's hard when you're traveling all the time.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there you go. I'm having like flashbacks to a kid when I would come home and my dad had goats and I was the one taking their stupid heads out of the fence. But it was my dad's goats, but there I was, but yeah. Okay. So goats. So we have no goats right now. And I'm assuming it's like ice fishing season and whatever else you do up there in the frozen tundra of frickin' Michigan.
Yeah. Some deer hunting, some, getting the snowblower ready on the tractor and, pole starting snowmobiles to get them going. The classics that I have in the garage, I'm trying to get those wrapped up so Charles can ride something around the yard. So that's kind of what we do up here with our flannel.
With your flannels. Oh, I'm wearing my flannel today. Okay. So I feel a little Michigan-y. You never know. There you go. Nope. Our guest even has on his flannel. We'll introduce him here in just a second. But, well, you'll have to share some pictures of, I think you've shared some pictures before of your snowmobiles and all of your little classic gadgets and gizmos. And well, we're, like I said before, y'all know I'm crazy Texas football mom. Son's a senior. Yeah, crazy Texas football mom. Little school here in Texas. We're actually this week we're in the fourth round of the playoffs. My kid is still playing. Yeah, it's life consuming. It's highs, lows, everything else in between. And it completely stresses me out. But you know, it's fun. It's what we do. And so I have to give you an update. Like I said, we're in the fourth round. So six rounds is a state game. So we're halfway through playoffs. Only 88 teams in the state of Texas, all levels, are still playing football in December. So it's pretty cool. Pretty cool. And it's a lot of fun. And Zach's still playing. So what can I say? But okay, let's go ahead and get started. Like I was saying on schedules and stuff, Nathan's not with us today because Nathan, those pesky airplanes get in the way. But we have a really cool guest, so we did not want to delay again. And we wanted to get some information. And Andy has just been chomping at the bit to talk to this guy. And so let's go ahead and get started. Sure. Andy, introduce who are we going with?
Yeah, I was nervous to even contact this guy because I didn't know if he was in the CIA or what the deal was, because his information is phenomenal. And, you know, like running a startup and being in startup mode and kind of learning through the last, you know, 5 years in business of what financials actually mean and what the, you know, the trend of the SPAC that kind of blew up, of course, about 5 years ago, but we're so far behind in business aviation that now it's cool in business aviation. So it's pretty interesting. And so I wanted our guest to come on and kind of, you know, explain some of the stuff, because I think that there's some hiding, I guess is the best way to say it, when it comes to an SPAC and some other things as far as financial reporting and metrics that they're allowed to get away with using versus, you know, what the standard going public means. So our guest without delay is Michael Riegel, which is German, I was informed. And he is coming to us from an island, which is pretty cool, if you know me. Ooh. So, Michael, glad to have you. Super excited to talk to you. Give us a little intro and lay it on us.
Thanks for inviting me, guys. I'm based on the Isle of Man, which is a small rock in the middle of the Irish Sea. My background is almost entirely business aviation. I'm an academic by training I got two master's degrees in physiology of all things marketing and a master's in applied aeronautics and an MBA, and then got somehow started a flying school when I was at Cranfield in England doing my first master's degree and got the bug. So I got my pilot's license and then turned my back on academia, which is where most of my family comes from, and moved into aviation and progressed through mostly smaller companies, a couple of GA startups based in England, and eventually went to British Aerospace, which was the opposite of what I was really keen to do. And just at the point where they were starting to be broken up and sold off in parts. So went back, did an MBA at 32, and then joined Bombardier. And they were looking at that time to try to increase the kind of IQ of the company. They'd made some good decisions, the Global Express, before I arrived, and they'd made some pretty bad decisions, the Learjet 45. And they seemed keen to take a more kind of scientific or market-driven approach. So I joined the company and then immediately got immersed in the politics of big companies and a lack of enthusiasm on the part of some people to let go of that kind of sales guy telling the engineers what they needed. But I stuck with it and went ahead and did a whole bunch of research talking to 800 aircraft owners. And given that it was only a few million dollars, I was humored by the company. But eventually it came down to a decision. They had to decide between going with their gut, which tends to happen a lot in this industry, and purchase the Galaxy program and the Astra program from Israeli Aircraft Industries, or go with me and build a brand new design, which today is the Challenger 3500, I guess, is the latest name. And fortunately, the chairman took a liking to a data-driven approach, having just blown $600 million on a Learjet 45, which never really was very successful. And away we went. And then I had recommended that they get into the fractional business, and they established Flexjet in May of 95, and almost immediately realized they were in way over their heads. So they approached me again and said, would you join us and help? So I split my time between the frozen wastelands of Montreal. You know, it was minus 50 the night I arrived, and my Burberry overcoat from London, and, you know, damn nearly froze to death. rolled up at the Avis outlet where the woman gave me a stick and said, you know, good luck, son, beauty, eh? And I went out and had to beat a Cadillac for about 30 minutes, which did at least keep me warm. And then on the flip side, spent most half my time in Dallas, which was a delight. And so basically was building the Flexjet operation on the one side and designing everything from software to operational policies and procedures and lots of boring background stuff. And up in Montreal was in charge of marketing initially just for the Challenger, the older Challenger, the 600 series. And then within a few months, they pushed me up into a new division. That's just right about the time that Bombardier pulled all of their business aircraft pieces together. And they gave me control of marketing, strategic planning, product planning, business development, quite a wide range. So I did that for 6 years and had an absolute blast, and then quit, just burned out from running a fractional provider is exhausting. 24/7, never lets up. I did that part-time for 6 years and full-time for three, and was just exhausted. So set up my own company. The one thing I felt that was missing was a company that would advise share owners and give them good advice, because it's a very predatory industry, I think is a polite way of putting it. The contracts are not written to be helpful, and enjoyed doing that. And I've done that for 21 years. So it's a small one-man band. I do three things. I advise high net worth individuals about how to stay out of trouble, which most of them somehow manage to do anyway. I get into trouble. So my job is to really give them advice. Who should they work with? Which aircraft types are the best for them? Should they get a package that includes, say, charter and fractional, or, you know, and then as cards and other options like membership programs have emerged, it's my job to keep up to date on all of that. So a lot of consumer advice. I also advise investment companies. So they'll send me a prospectus, or they will ask me to take a close look at a company with a view to investing, you know, a few tens of millions up to a few hundreds of millions. And it's really my job to look under the hood and figure out if that's a smart investment or not. And then I still dabble in aircraft designs. The Embraer Praetor 500 and 600 are two more of mine. And I give advice occasionally, which has led to programs being canceled, regrettably, but just they weren't good designs. So that's pretty well what I've spent the last, God knows, 30 something years doing.
That's all?
Yeah.
Yeah. Other than that, I've managed to, you know, have a couple of kids, and, you know, I don't keep goats.
And you don't keep goats?
I don't, no.
The Isle of Man. The only thing I know is about the sport bike race over there where, you know, people die every single year.
TT. Yeah. It's something I don't attend. Yeah.
Yeah. It's gruesome. Well, that's pretty interesting.
That's it. I mean, it's extremely interesting. I love that. I mean, I'm trying to put all the pieces together here, because if one of the great things is, like, you know, if you're listening, I love following his content on LinkedIn. You know, there's a, cause you know, it's usually a very unbiased, frank discussion. What's going on, you know, there's not any of the markety, when he does an evaluation of what's happening in the market space. And, you know, it's great to read that. I mean, that's very educational. You know, I don't have that background. So every time he posts something, I make sure and go read it. And then I probably need to start printing it out. And that way I can ask some questions, cause I do need to do that. But it's interesting. I love the fact that you're now doing it from the consumer perspective, you know, educating the consumer, working with the clients, because I'm a firm believer that the better educated our consumers are, the better retention we have, the better experience they have. It's a positive impact all the way around. You get better customers, they have a better experience, they have better expectations of what's going on. I don't know. I love this era of the educated consumer and having people like you who can do that. And whether it's an investor or somebody who's buying into a fractional or something along those lines. I don't know. I'm always for more education and for that perspective. So I love the fact that you're able to do that and bring it, Michael.
Well, I'll give you an example. I appreciate the comment. It's a client of mine from 3 months ago came at me and said, you know, we didn't use you to purchase our shares, but we now own them. And he owned two shares with NetJets, an eighth in a Global Express and an eighth in a Citation Longitude. And between the two of them, they'd invested about $11 million. And basically, they did that going through the pandemic, because they needed to travel, they needed to do so quickly. And they figured that as the pandemic came to an end, they rightly calculated that it would be difficult to get hold of ours as the market started to recover. But they found very quickly that they could return to using airlines and lean on those for a lot of the work they were doing. And they had access to a local charter company that just worked out to be a great deal less expensive for their particular flying profile. So they wanted to get rid of them. So, you know, we approached NetJets, and to cut a long story short, they took a 45% haircut. Ooh. They got back 55% of the $11 million that they put in. And instantaneously, and we're talking about an extremely high profile principal. So the main person behind everything is someone who can influence hundreds of others.
Right.
And the bad experience he had being basically mauled by NetJets unnecessarily, because, you know, he was selling back the shares that were basically brand new. NetJets would have had every opportunity to turn around and resell those shares, you know,
right,
at new pricing. So while they're in the business of making money, and I certainly understand that, I've been there. I think that some of those tactics are, and in this particular case, have turned somebody off of business aviation. And that's a tragedy for me, because that spreads, that infection, if you like, in terms of his approach, is to tell everybody in his orbit that they should avoid business aviation because of the downside costs. So I think in part, you know, I set the business up because I saw so many people being taken advantage of. Mm-hmm. You know, I felt to some extent with Flexjet, we were doing the same, but for my determination while I was there to avoid that. If we found somebody and our service just wasn't right, or I felt like we were going to screw them, we were doing it purely for the money, I would walk away from those kinds of deals. Now, nobody else would, but I, you know, personally, I think being ethical is, you know, the way to go. So, and sadly within the industry, we've now reached a point where there is so much hype, mm-hmm. whether it is the likes of SPACs or, you know, other vehicles that are being used, or simply the you know, if you look at Vista Global, their unwillingness to share anything more than the revenue line in terms mm-hmm. of what they're doing. So from a consumer standpoint, if all you do is look at the hype, you're going to think of all of these companies as being terrific, when in actual fact, many of them, Wheels Up included, are losing huge sums and have a major, major challenge associated with dragging themselves into the black, particularly given how big they are these days. So, you know, it's, I feel it's just, you know, somebody needs to be out there saying it the way it is. But I have rules. So it's got to be fact-based. It's got to be, you know, I need numbers. I need market data, which I've always been very good at accumulating. And I also get a lot of intelligence and feedback from a lot of contacts and friends in the industry. So I just synthesize all of that. And like you, I don't monetize anything I do on LinkedIn. It's purely intended to educate, and I make business other ways.
Yeah. That's interesting. I, as a dabbling in journalism, local journalism here in Ann Arbor, it's funny to me personally, and I don't know why this is, but when you look at the publications in business aviation, it's just press releases. They're printing press releases that are prepared by the company. There is nobody out there kicking over rocks saying, well, how is that possible? Or what does that mean? And calling, because it's such a close industry. And I'm one of the people that I'm guilty of it, that if I say something and piss somebody off, I'm going to be black sheep now in the industry because I said something that is true that I have uncovered or discovered, but nobody wants to hear that. It's all this nice peaches and rainbows going on.
Well, and the downside of all of this now is with the market surging, the potential for one of these big players, be it Flexjet as they go into their SPAC or Wheels Up in the situation they're in, the potential for one of these companies to go under is enormous, because, you know, as you guys know, running your own business, expanding and growing rapidly is more expensive and more challenging from a management standpoint than not growing or even contracting. So for a company like Wheels Up, trying to fix a business that is that big with that many customers flying that many hours, it would be arduous, you know, at the best of times. But what saddens me at the moment is that we're seeing this sort of massive consolidation within the industry with huge players like Wheels Up basically buying up all of these smaller Part 135 operations, or purchasing Air Partner in the UK, you know, or expanding as say NetJets are doing, without really anybody looking at that and saying, well, is this good for the industry? And it's, you know, I remember many years ago, a company that ran at their peak, 55 Piaggio Avantis, a company called Avantair based in Florida. I took a good close look at them, and having run a fractional operation, put some financials together, you know, using information that very few people would have, and came to the conclusion that they must be losing not just money, but losing large amounts of money. And I, at that time, took the industry perspective and said, you know what? They won't be allowed to fail. They're too big. So everything's going to be fine. So I advised my clients to steer clear, but I didn't say anything beyond that. And I to this day, have regrets for keeping my mouth shut. And I won't do that anymore, because, you know, the players are bigger. The risks are greater, you know, consumers. When Avantair went under, I had three or four clients who were share owners, not shareholders. They owned shares within the program, and they were wiped out. They lost 95% of the money they put in. And, you know, there's a part of me that says, well, I might have been able to do something about that if I'd been willing to be more vocal. So I don't take advertising. I won't take money. I won't get subscriptions because I've been on the other side. When I was with Bombardier, we had one trade publication that was never nice to us. And when they stepped over the line and went from being unpleasant to being factually inaccurate, we trod on them. And I controlled the largest marketing budget in the industry at that time. And, you know, we snapped them back into line because they depended entirely upon major industry players for their income. And I never want to be in a position where somebody can do that to me, which is why I operate the way I do.
Well, you know, it's interesting, you know, it is like Andy was saying, you know, it's all rainbows and stuff. And I think one of the things is, like you're talking about the market right now, there's so many new entrants into business aviation, whether it's from, you know, people flying, you know, chartering for the first time, got a jet card for the first time, or this onslaught of investors for the first time who believe like some, I mean, or who are relying, maybe that's a better word, who are relying on the marketing hype on some of these opportunities. And, you know, things are good. I mean, things have been very good in business aviation, didn't take a hit like they did in commercial, different things like that. There are a lot of opportunities. However, you know, I see it, there's just a part of me that, you know, some of these people and these investors, like you're talking about the SPACs and stuff like that, what are they, do they realize the industry they've invested in? That's one of the things that I'm always curious. Do you understand the highs, the lows, the cyclical nature, the long-term planning? Do you understand the industry that you just invested in? That's one of the things I always kind of wonder. Or is there like a marketing hype or that because of COVID and everything that happened with that, that's more of an anomaly. I mean, granted, we were in the right place at the right time, but you know, that's just kind of one of the things that I think is, do they, because some, it's very easy to manipulate the numbers when you're talking to your investors. And I think that's when it's important, like somebody like you, Michael, who comes in and says, okay, this is really what it means when you're looking at the market data. And these are what the financials mean. And this is what your true potential is for this. I don't know. That's one of the things I always wonder when I see all these people who are super excited about getting into business aviation, but haven't necessarily done it before.
Well, it isn't just the marketing hype. It's the fact that, I mean, investors in general, particularly people who buy into SPACs, for example, clearly set a different standard in terms of the amount of information they feel they need to make that investment. You know, I invest in companies that I understand, which means I go through the annual reports and see to it that you know, I keep a close eye on everything under the hood. But SPACs don't have the same reporting requirements, and they exist largely for that purpose. It gives people an easy way to buy into a company that you know, is already there, and you know, effectively, you know, get a listing quickly and relatively easily compared to a full-blown public listing, which is why I generally avoid them. But the other issue for me is one of just simple, broad-based ignorance. You know, business aviation as an industry really hasn't grown. You know, most people don't realize the fractional industry today has not grown over the fleet size that was out there 17 years ago. And when you talk to people and say, well, you know, how big is it today versus how, you know, the size it was back in, you know, 2002, 2003, it's actually shrunk. NetJets as a company is smaller today than it was 20 years ago. So when you start to inject a little bit of realism and some real data, some hard numbers that nobody can argue with, first off, it makes it easy to write articles. You know, when you're as ancient as I am, and you've been around in the industry for the better part of four decades, and I'm, you know, a bit of a magpie. I keep spreadsheets. I keep all of the data that I've accumulated over many years. So there's nothing we're seeing today that we haven't seen before, that kind of mindless optimism that goes into growth. And the industry is, how can I put this delicately, isn't particularly reflective when it comes to making the same mistakes time and time again. This time around, it's SPACs and fleet operations, which are, you know, getting their day. You know, 20 years ago, it was the ultra long range segment, which is now so ridiculously overpopulated with aircraft that, you know, they can't all win. You know, you can't build. Bombardier have got, you know, what, four models. Gulfstream have got five, I think it is. Dassault will soon have four. So we've got, what, 11 or so aircraft being squeezed into a segment that 20 years ago had two. So if you want to maintain momentum, the level of growth you need to see is absurd. And the number of people who are in the market to purchase a Global Express is really very, very small, and it doesn't grow appreciably. So again, the only way that you would invest in those aircraft or in fractional ownership is if you genuinely believe that those markets are going to maintain that kind of momentum going forward. And I'm afraid history works against you. Fractional, to your point, fractional is cyclical. You know, the hardware industry is cyclical and severely so. So, you know, we are fortunate at the moment that the industry is doing well in spite of the kind of wider economic environment, but costs are rising across the industry aggressively, maintenance, parts, fuel, pilot costs, training costs, and so on. You know, if you look at all of the manufacturers, they're boasting about the fact that they're seeing 20, 25% year-on-year growth in revenues from support services and maintenance. Well, who's paying for that? And there's no regulation within the industry that controls these costs. So the result is that the cost to the consumer is just getting out of control. And when I talk to people, and that's where I try to stay grounded, you know, when I express an opinion, you know, I either stick to the facts or I go and talk to one of the 1,100 or so high net worth individuals and companies that I work with. They give me feedback and tell me what they feel, and then I fold that into my editorial. So I'm not simply making a bunch of straight financial numbers, market data that I hear in turn from Fogim and Bombardier at the top down. My view is you need to do the blocking and tackling right. You need to be the smaller companies that serve local markets that don't get too big for their boots and decide to go with a SPAC or some kind of other public offering and get themselves highly leveraged. Those are the companies that will survive. Mm-hmm. And it's the middle ground players, the players that get too big for their boots, take on, you know, you look at Flexjet, they're looking at just massively ramping up their debt in order to expand. And when you look at the way they're planning to expand, the market isn't there. The market's already been tried. NetJets have tried China. They've tried the Middle East. They're in Europe. And they've never been able to make much money there. So again, it's hype. And for me, hype isn't of much interest. I'm much more interested in substance. And I'm afraid the substance paints, you know, a lot of people accuse me of being a bit of a, you know, an old curmudgeon, but I'm not here to protect the egos and the you know, the fragile personalities of industry players. I'm here to protect the consumer. And consumers are the ones who are going to end up losing if the music stops.
Yeah. No, it's crazy. I mean, the Wheels Up thing, I've been following that pretty closely since, you know, since they launched. And I'm just curious, you know, what's your opinion? Because there's people out there that are going to listen to this that aren't familiar with the SPACs and you know, what that means. And so what would be a good way to sum that up for our listeners, as far as, you know, what's going on, how's the reporting work, you know, what's the real beef?
Well, the SPACs are effectively, I mean, they are a public company, but their reporting requirements in terms of the level of detail they're required to publish are significantly looser than they are. And the SEC, according to some of the feedback I've heard, kind of acknowledge that or may be in the process of trying to fix that. Mm-hmm. But you end up in a situation where you simply can't get enough granular information about what's going on at the likes of Wheels Up to really get a good sense of what's happening, what are the root causes of the problems that they're having. And then you look kind of more widely at their activity, take a look at the level of flight activity using Flight Radar 24, look at their fleet, and there's this kind of hodgepodge of used airplanes that they've purchased, 74 King Air 350s, which are entirely the wrong airplane to use in this kind of operation, as they are basically now acknowledging. You know, so they went out and purchased those aircraft. Now they've gone back out because they need cash, and they've used a lot of the company-owned airplanes to secure a substantial credit line to help them financially. But the bottom line for me is you know, cash is king in these businesses. And this is a company that is hemorrhaging cash at a prodigious rate. And despite they had some substantial resources to begin with, but blowing 100 and something million buying Air Partner, a company that makes no sense strategically and will only make a minor contribution to their financial performance. You know, they've made some decisions that at best are questionable. And trying to fix a company that big and that busy, you know, it's like operating on a live patient, only you've got a dozen different procedures to do, and you're simply hoping that the patient doesn't die while you're busy fiddling around with different parts, trying to keep, you know, the patient alive. And my view of Wheels Up is, given the sheer numbers that they're racking up, the losses they're accumulating, and having run a large operation, you know, I had 108 airplanes at Flexjet, building operational systems to try to improve efficiency and you know, dealing with something simple to you know, in terms of your world, to AOGs. How do you keep aircraft flying? And when you've got 10 airplanes, that's a relatively simple thing to do. When you've got 100, it's an unbelievably complex thing to do and very expensive. So trying to turn around a company like Wheels Up becomes more difficult. In many ways, it would be better to kind of shut the doors and say, you know what, we're not going to take any more business. We're going to hold where we are, and we're going to try to fix things under the hood so that we can, you know, continue delivering good service. And that's the problem with a company like Wheels Up. And I see no honesty from them, no willingness to step up and say, you know what, here's where we're making mistakes. And here are the things we really need to fix. And there are no reporting requirements or apparently any desire within a company to fix that. That's kind of a shame. It's a hell of a shame for their consumers.
Yeah, it's rough. I probably would have taken a step back before I had to mortgage aircraft and then hit a 12% interest rate on the money or whatever it was. I tell Lindsay, my wife, all the time, I wouldn't be able to sleep at night if I was in that situation, because they know that there's no way out. And now they're just going to continue going down this rabbit hole, and they're going to drag anybody that they can, you know, along with them, unfortunately. But it's, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. And, you know, there's a butt for every seat, they say. So I wish they would have came knocking on MRO Insider's door and said, we'll give you $100 million for your app and your technology to help us. It's like, man, there's a sucker's born every minute. But,
well, yeah. And that for me is what I find interesting, is there are good investments. There are great companies out there that are doing it right. And they seem to go unnoticed, and I've never really understood why, because they're good candidates. You know, your company, MRO Insider, with a relatively modest injection of capital, you could do a great deal, but sure. You get to Wheels Up and modest injections just won't cut it any longer. You need huge amounts of money. Flexjet are looking to raise $3 billion. And, you know, that's, so if things go wrong, it's the founders, I'm assuming, will be very well provided for, because a fair percentage of that $3 billion will line their pockets. So at that point, they can largely check out, and because there are no consequences if things go wrong. If they do go wrong, and we suddenly see they operate around 200 planes. If those aircraft get dumped onto the market, it has a devastating impact on the value of Phenom 300s or, you know, Gulfstream 450s or whatever. And those are the issues that concern me the most, is we're just at that point where we've got these huge 800-pound gorillas. Mm-hmm. And if somebody walks up behind one of those gorillas and shoots it in the head, we have a big, big problem as an industry. So the very consolidation we're seeing kind of ratchets up the risk if things don't go well. So from a consumer standpoint, I look around the industry, I look at Vista Global, a company that never does anything other than talk up revenue growth and so on, and they do not report or discuss how they're doing underneath the hood. And when I run my own numbers, I do not believe they're making money. I'm fairly confident they're losing a substantial amount per year. And if the market starts to cool down and that growth that they're depending upon ceases, and that is going to happen, it's beginning to show signs of doing so, then we could see not just one, but multiple companies in that Wheels Up, Flexjet, Vista Global category go under. And any one of them going under would be a huge hit for the industry as a whole. And more importantly, for consumers, for the poor people who are putting the money into those companies, it's going to do tremendous damage to business aviation. Because, you know, if I've learned anything from business aviation, and you guys know this better than I do, it's a highly networked world. So, you know, if you make a mistake, if you screw one person, then you've screwed that person's entire network. Mm-hmm. So the downside risk is unreal.
I've told people for years, it's a worldwide industry. It's a very, very small community. And when you know, being on the brokerage side, which is relatively new to me and stuff, I mean, I've worked in the periphery over the years. There's some wonderful, very highly ethical, wonderful brokers, but there's a few who've done enough to tarnish like an entire side of it. And, you know, there's enough people who will, you know, they kind of stay out of it, or they would rather do things themselves, which is to their own detriment because they don't understand what's going on, but they, you know, they've lost the trust in that. And when you lose, it's a very small network, you know, and we talk about that frequently. You know, it's 2 degrees of separation in what you're doing. And when you like a high net worth individual, you know, something happens like that, they talk. And they're done, and they will find another option. They will do something else, either with their time or their money. And, you know, it's very, very hard to counter that all where you go forward. And, you know, that's why, you know, we were having a good discussion earlier, and I can't remember. I said that is like, you know, a better educated consumer helps us all, because it does help to kind of counter when things go bad. They understand the big picture a little bit better. And that, you know, it might just be like a single incident rather than a reflection of the entire industry on what's going on. But, you know, there's things that happen. And, you know, in Wheels Up, I think it's an interesting study just on how they approach the industry, the partnerships, the acquisitions, you know, that, you know, the Delta Private Jets part to me is an interesting aspect of it. You know, how do they leverage all of this, and how does it work? And so, but like I said, a better educated consumer goes in understanding what's going on, and then they can make better decisions about who they're working with or for, or where their money's going, whether it's an investment or whether it's a flight.
I completely agree. And it's, you know, when I first came into the industry, when I negotiated, we did, when I was with FlexShare, we had 650 share owners, and we had probably negotiated with another 2,000 or so, many of whom went to NetJets. And during those discussions, it struck me that nobody was getting good independent advice. So you're talking to high net worth individuals or even companies saying, who's advising you? Oh, well, our tax attorney is, or we have a corporate counsel who is, none of whom have got any directly relevant, you know, industry information. So I saw so many examples where people basically were about to tread on a landmine because they were making a bad call. And I saw to it within my sales group at Flexjet that we were ethical enough, because I kept saying to them, you know, unwinding one of these deals and pissing off somebody, you know, who's in that particular node in San Francisco or in Dallas or wherever is not something we're here to do. I would rather not get into a deal and walk away with that man or woman saying thank you for behaving ethically. Now, 99 times out of 100, they would promptly go to somebody who didn't care, who would take their money and cause problems. But it's the same way I run my advisory business, which is, you know, you may not like what I tell you, but, you know, I'm going to say it anyway, which is why I get my fees up front. So, and that's the only way you can be. So I don't broker aircraft and never have done, because there are just too many people out there who are skunks and don't have ethics. They don't care. If they can make a few bucks, that's all they care about. But sadly, I see that all the way up and down the industry. You look at Wheels Up, I think Kenny Dichter is a brilliant marketer. He's built a hell of a brand. What he hasn't done is to do the stuff behind the scenes to see to it that the company can deliver, both financially for their investors and in terms of service for their customers. And I just don't see the point in doing the one without the other. Because the only thing that's going to happen is, you know, if they're fortunate, somebody will come in and snap them up and put some money, well, very little money on the table, take it over and clean it up. But that is such a monumental undertaking at this stage. I wouldn't do it. And I've got experience with these sorts of turnarounds. I wouldn't go near it. You know, so that's the sadness for me is just watching the industry. You know, the industry is benefiting. The economy is doing relatively well. The pandemic helped. The fact that the airlines monumentally screwed up and still are. They're badly run. I mean, airlines have never been particularly well run at the best of times, but particularly at the moment. So a lot of people are turning to business aviation because there simply is no alternative. Right. And that's terrific for the industry, and the industry should be enjoying, you know, make hay while the sun shines. But don't forget the fact that if people have a choice, you know, I'm seeing the same old marketing hype I've seen for 40 years. Oh, well, it's becoming, you know, we're reaching a point where if you fill an airplane full of people, you know, it's roughly the equivalent of a business class or a first class fare. You know, it isn't. It never will be. And sooner or later, a lot of that traffic is going to move back into the airlines once the airlines get their act together and start delivering decent service. And that's, you've always got to be mindful of that. But we're in an industry where nobody's interested. You know, the band is playing on the deck of the Titanic. And as long as the party continues, nobody's up in the crow's nest looking for the next iceberg. And that's the sadness. Yeah. So there's an inevitability. So a lot of people, I get so much flack. I've had death threats. I've had, you know, and I'm not kidding. I've had people get in touch saying, give me your address because you've been dissing Gulfstream for bad product strategy and I'm going to get you. And, you know, it's fortunately, I don't give my address out much because, you know, and nobody could find the Isle of Man anyway. So I think I'm pretty safe, but it's a.
I know Andy's got a mission now. It's a new island for him.
I'm friendly. Good luck with that. But it just saddens me to see, you know, the industry is all about the positive messaging and they're not about reality anymore. And the disconnect between the truth and the hype is that gulf is getting bigger and bigger. And that's a sadness for me. So when the music does stop, and it will, it always does. It's already beginning to stop. If you look at some of the key metrics in charter and fractional, demand is slowing down. And the moment that happens, a lot of these SPACs and grossly overvalued companies are going to have a very difficult time. So, you know, in fact, curiously, about the only companies that may do okay are the major manufacturers. A, because they're big and they've got plenty of resource. And B, because they really haven't done what they did back in the mid-2000s and expand. You know, they've got so many logistics and supply chain problems. They haven't expanded production to the kind of absurd lengths we hit in 2008, which then
on its own caused a massive downturn that impacted the industry right up until just after the pandemic. So, you know, that's the danger, if you like. It's the unpleasantness of being a strategist and a data-driven individual. You can see these cycles recurring. The only difference now is, you know, I work for the folks who pay the bills, and you know, people may not like the opinions I express. I don't single out individuals when I piece about a particular company. I'm focused. So, to your point, it will inform the consumer, and if the consumers are informed, at least when they go in, they're going in with some sense of what the risks are, either as an investor or as a customer.
I think that's interesting that you said that about the supply chain. I hadn't really thought about that. But that may turn out to be a positive consequence that kept manufacturing from responding in a way that they couldn't sustain. So it might have kind of kept them interesting. I hadn't thought about that one.
Well, I find it amusing because I look at, you know, all of the manufacturers saying, oh, well, our book-to-bill ratio is yeah, you know, 2 to 1. And yeah, you come away from that saying, okay, so if you don't deliver any aircraft this year and you take an order, your book-to-bill ratio is infinity. Which is an absurd way of basically saying, if you are failing to deliver airplanes, but you are still booking orders, your book-to-bill ratio is that if you're struggling to deliver good news at the moment, because it is restraining the industry, it's forcing them to limit their output, which I think is probably going to save them as we go forward. Because the one, as a product developer, as somebody builds aircraft, and I enjoy doing it, you know, the whole industry has gone nuts over the last 15 years. You know, Gulfstream built their brand on a single aircraft model all the way through until the late 90s. You know, Gulfstream 1, 2, 3, 4. Then they built the 4 and 5 together. Today, 280, 400, 500, 600, 700, 800. They have 6 programs in a market that simply hasn't grown to keep pace with the rate of development of airplanes. And it's true for everybody, but it's the pyramid's upside down. If you take a look at where all of the money has been invested, it's been invested at the top of the market. Mm-hmm. You know, again, people, pyramids, consumer pyramids, they're really simple. You know, guys who have the money to buy a $70 million aircraft are generally fewer than the people who've got enough money to buy a $5 million aircraft. And yet, you know, we haven't seen a decent light jet developed for 20, 25 years. So, and that's where I start to see those little anomalies where I look at it, mm-hmm, and think, well, something's wrong. You know, we've now got so many ultra long range jets out there. It is a guarantee that 3 or 4 of those programs are going to have to die. They're going to have to take a bullet in order to keep the others from being unprofitable. And that, for me, is sad. It's one of the reasons I left Bombardier in 2001 was I saw what was coming. I knew we were going to take a huge hit. I felt the company was being badly managed. I complained about it until I was hoarse, warning them that we were about to head into difficulties, sold my stock at basically 22, 23 Canadian per share. And within a year, it was below $1. So that's the down, you know, for me at least, that's the downside of doing what I do, is you tend to see the train wreck coming. And, you know, 20 years ago, I didn't do much more than observe, whereas now I much prefer getting out ahead of it and trying to warn people that things are getting a little iffy. But the only way to do it effectively is to see to it. It's very data driven and very factual, because otherwise you just paint a target on your forehead.
It's hard to argue with facts. So, you know, it's definitely, I will say that is one of the things that I do really enjoy about your content, is that it's data driven. You know, it's not pontificating you know, like Andy likes to pontificate with his pipe sitting out in the snow, you know, watching the snow come down while he's ice fishing or whatever he does up there. But you know, that's not what it is. It's here's the data, here's what it is. And I mean, I've been in this industry now since 2000. I've seen three major ups and downs based on what's happened. And, you know, it's always something I keep in the back of my mind. And, you know, I haven't been a business owner, a major, what I've been doing, but I remember even at one of my last jobs, I was like, you know, we're at an up. It must come down. There's always the come down. What is our plan for when things start to slow down? You know, when you looked at the 7 to 10 years, we've already hit the 7 year mark. So we know where something's going to happen. So what do you have planned? You're looking at the cycles and you're looking at the trends on how aviation as a whole goes, how business aviation goes. What are you looking at, and how do you plan for when we go in the downturn? You know, and then we can go back into growth mode at a certain point. But how do you plan for that? And are you aware of that? I think that sometimes, are you aware of that? And how are you going to address that? That's always one of the things that I always, because you can grow too big too fast in the good times. And then then everything comes crashing down at the end.
Well, to your point, you aren't prepared. When I did my MBA, I remember doing a course on scenario planning. Mm-hmm. And one of the leaders of that time was an Anglo-Dutch company called Shell Oil. And they always kept three binders on the shelf. You know, what happens if we grow? What happens if we stay the same? What happens if the business declines? And they always kept that plan up to date. So they always had themselves covered, whichever way the market moved. And that, for me, from a simple kind of existential standpoint, if you're covered always, it's very difficult to fail in business. Right. But I take a look. For me, the indicator that the industry is back into Titanic party mode is when I see NBAA. I haven't gone to NBAA for 11 years. I don't go to trade events. All I see is huge events where the industry is so busy, either networking or patting themselves on the back. And there are two things for me. I try to persuade Bombardier to stop going to NBAA. Because I basically said, if we are so lazy that we cannot access the small number of real customers who go there, then, you know, and spend $3 to $5 million in the process, then shame on us. If we can't do better than that, then we should be ashamed of ourselves. And I was overruled, whether rightly or wrongly, by the company. But what I see these days is just this excess that the industry, you know, if you possess the skill to make a difference for your company, then there are two things you do. Is number one, you work for the company. You don't jump on airlines and blow weeks at a time hitting the road. And number two, you don't share that knowledge around. You know, business is not a team sport. It is you competing against the other guy. So if you possess knowledge that's useful to your company and unique to your company, you keep it. You don't try and spread it around. So at the moment, we're seeing the industry blowing millions and millions of dollars every year, getting together for boondoggles. And I don't see the benefit. They're great if you want to become part of the aviation community. Mm-hmm. But for me, the real leaders in any business are those who do things differently. Mm-hmm. I did an MBA, not because I wanted to learn how to run a successful business, but because I wanted to learn how everybody else felt you should run a successful business. And then when I started running businesses after then and went to Bombardier, I did things differently. I did research when every other manufacturer either allowed their engineers or their salespeople to define their new products. And that would prove to be very successful. Sadly, almost none of that exists because there are so many big egos in the industry that these guys figure that, well, if I've been successful as a business leader, then, you know, I mean, I'll give you one example. The final presentation where I presented what became the Challenger 3500, you know, I sat in front of the board of directors of Bombardier Corporate and said, here's what we need to do. And, you know, the head of the aerospace group, I won't use names because I don't, said, I think we should purchase the Galaxy program from IAI. And I said, well, you've got a very simple decision to make. And in my unusually blunt manner for somebody who's British, I said, well, you can do one of two things. We've got this person who runs the company and who is never going to be purchasing one of these airplanes. So you can believe him, or you can believe the 800 people who do own airplanes whom I have spoken to. So it's over to you, make up your mind. And, you know, that in large part is kind of a metaphor for the industry. Too many decisions being made based upon ego and, you know, people shooting from the hip or using their own experience rather than going out and doing what they should do, which is using the market and the consumer as the touchstone and then building everything around that. Because if you do that, it's very difficult to go wrong.
Yeah, I agree. We have a great mentor who is related to me. He's my cousin, and he did exactly what you said. He said, I need three projections every year, and you need to keep them. They're live documents. I need the worst case scenario for if you lose half your business, where are you going to be at for cash, middle of the road, and then give me your pie in the sky. Well, we all know, like, with wheels up, it's all a lot of startups, right? Oh, we're going to be multimillionaires next year. Fly exclusive. They said in their prospectus that I read on their website, they're going to go from 2 million a year in outside third party MRO to next year 14.6. I'm going, what are you buying, Duncan? I mean, like, what? How are there's no feasible way. First of all, you're not going to find the technicians, so you don't even have the employees to have that output. Plus, you're growing your fleet, and you want to do 80% of your own maintenance in house. So, like, there's only so many man hours available. But anyways, so we do those three scenarios. The pie in the sky is great. I've learned my lesson the hard way with starting out in our first year because we didn't know what to base it on because nobody's done this. Mm-hmm. So we're like, well, I don't know. I figure we'll do this and you know, we'll go from there. And then I started adjusting it, but now we've got a good handle on it. But it's it's such an interesting industry with the ego, like you said, because it's, my wife sums it up the best. She doesn't like being in it because of it's very macho. And so she came from healthcare and leadership in the health in hospice is really what she's an RN, but she did leadership. And so he gets into it and she said, look, the best way I can sum it up is it's the friend of the really hot girl. And they think that they're just as hot. Well, this is the guy that owns the plane. And so these guys buddy up and they think that they get in the plane and turn to the right, but really they don't. They're not even close to that, but they feel like they are, you know? And I said, well, that's a pretty good way. Cause I've had experience, you know, with that. You try to, you know, go for the right girl and stuff, but it's pretty interesting, but they don't. Yeah. The change is tough. The way that the cash burn is insane. I'm writing an essay right now. This morning I was working on it. And the first thing I wanted to write was, and I wrote it, was it's so much cheaper to keep a customer and to make them happy than to get another one. And our goal at MRO Insider someday is that we don't have to attend any trade shows because I don't want to go. And I'm very introverted when it comes to that stuff. And so why would I go there and spend money and have a booth when our customers are happy? I mean, we know who the customers are, you know, we know where to reach them. All the flight departments are our customers. I can fly my plane around and see five customers a day. So I know where they're at. I don't need to go there and pay $8,000 to have a table with a tablecloth on it and a chair to talk to people, you know? So it's very interesting. So my cousin refuses to go to trade shows. He's grown his company from 10 million to, they'll do 250 million this year in revenue. He owns it by himself. He's refused all venture capital. He gets called every week to buy the company, but he's not where he wants to be yet. And he's got six times his EBITDA saved up in the bank to make acquisitions. You know, so when you see that and then you come back into business aviation, yikes.
I mean, yeah, I remember the guy who's a friend of mine, Mike Roth, who came in and ran the first the business aircraft division for Bombardier and then the aerospace group, a guy called Mike Roth, wonderful man, very, very smart. And we had a blast because it's I went to him about NBAA and said, you know, we're going to probably drop 3.5 million in 3 to 4 days. And I spoke to the marketing team I had in Montreal and said, how much business have we done? And just blank expressions. Okay. How many potential or existing aircraft owners have come to the event? And again, blank expressions. And, you know, so I said, so we're spending $3.5 million plus we were flying 300 plus company personnel and taking them out of action for a week. By the time you add in all their travel and all of the meetings, we bolted onto the front and back end. And I said, you know, so if we look at the 3.5, it's really more like 7.5 by the time you take that productivity hit into consideration. And what are people doing there? And it turned out it was, you know, well, it's a job fair, first and foremost. And I just said, you know, enough. So then we started looking at it, you know, NBAA, we were the biggest spender at NBAA by far. Nobody was even close because, you know, the first time I went there, our booth was an acre. And, you know, we had three, I think it was Learjets that we took on a barge. This is in New Orleans and lifted into the exhibit. We had a video wall that was kind of state of the art. And, you know, we were spending money like a bunch of drunken sailors. And at the end of it all, nobody could tell me what the exhibition was doing for us. So we invited an individual in who was the head of NBAA and said, well, why would we do this? And I said, well, there are ways we could trim our costs. Why are we buying our hotel rooms through NBAA? Well, it turns out that's where they make most of their money. That's how they accumulate the money they use to run a big team of people at NBAA. And I said, well, I don't feel like doing that. We're spending enough without enriching you further. Why don't we just go ahead and do it on our own or bootstrap our own smaller presence at the same time and cut our costs? Well, oh God. So, you know, the head of NBAA flew out to Montreal and, you know, he started pounding the table with me saying, I'm going to see to it that you're fired. And Mike Groff came in and said, you know, gentlemen, and this person said to Mike, you need to get rid of him. You know, he's going to destroy your standing in the industry. And Mike looked at the guy and said, well, I hear you're effing us pretty bad. So we're a little tired of taking it in the rear end. So what are we going to do about that? And that allowed us to make a lot of changes. But there's a lot of conventional wisdom in the industry. We do things because that's the way they've always been done. And for me, the real innovation is throwing the rule book out and saying, what have we got to do to bring more business in? So, you know,
I'm looking at the time here, and what I've learned, one of these things, Michael, is that I think we're going if we're going to figure out a way to have you on more often, because we have a lot more questions. And, you know, and I would definitely not be surprised if Andy did figure out a way to end up on the Isle of Man. That is probably in his little goal right now, to figure out how to get over there. But I think so. Gosh, you know what? I gotta quit thinking. The gerbils and hamsters are like going in so many different directions in my brain right now. But I just really appreciate, I guess it all comes down to this. I just appreciate what you bring to the table now. And, you know, as many of the bad things that happen with social media, and we all know there's a whole lot of negative out there, but I think a positive is that it does give voices, active voices, to people who can share. And, you know, and now granted, LinkedIn's probably my favorite social media platform. Because I do look at it, and that's where I get at least a lot of the start on what I'm trying to find information on. And so the fact that you share it, and the fact that you are so open, honest, and data driven, you know, at the end of the day, and like, statistics can all be changed. What kind of picture do you want to paint with your numbers? But at the end of the day, you can get down to the root numbers and find out what's really going on. And so really, really appreciate that perspective, Michael. And I guess people don't have enough things on their mind, or can't be enough open minded enough to understand, to look at the data. Don't give you death threats. Good Lord. That's just, I mean, I have my favorite stuff, but I'm never going to give somebody a death threat because they're being realistic about something. Sheesh. But no, I just really appreciate your candor on what you do and your willingness to share it in such an open forum. And I do understand, you know, like you were talking about the, I just lost my train of thought, but like, you know, if I had said something, would it have helped in the past? And so now we have a forum where you can share that and you can say it. And like we said, a better educated consumer, a better educated flyer, a better educated sales force, you know, when you're getting your salespeople out there, you know, it's just going to make it better for everybody. And when the downs come, the downs may not be as bad. There's always going to be the ups and downs, but what do you do to make sure that you're kind of, you know, mitigating that risk and preparing? And so, you know, I think that's what it is. You don't want to be the only one. No. So, but thank you. Thank you so much for participating with us today. Andy, any final words you want to?
No, I think it was wonderful. I enjoy the business stuff and the startup talk and all that stuff. So I think we'll definitely have to have you back on if you're open and willing to do it. Because I think that a lot of people are going to enjoy listening to this. It was extremely educational.
Very educational.
I hope so. I admire what you guys do. I'm not a huge advocate of social media. LinkedIn is my only outlet just because it's the least toxic of the options. But these podcasts I've typically avoided, but you guys have made me a convert to the cause. So well done for what you do.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. And there we go. Good. Yes. Yeah. I mean, well, part of it, like I said, is we're technologically challenged. So what you see is what you get. So that kind of keeps that going on. But no, I think, you know, it's an educational platform and we enjoy finding people who are, you know, we don't want to give the same voice to everything. It's very easy to live and work in an echo chamber, and that's not what we want to do. And we definitely, you know, we always enjoy like the small business perspective of it. Cause I do think that's one of the great things about business aviation is, yes, there's some very major players, but there's a lot of opportunities to create your own niche and address a problem like Andy's done that, you know, if you think about it, you can do it and you can do it right. And so I also think that's why we like to highlight a lot of small business owners and what they're doing, kind of that outlier, and the people who are doing the right things for the right reasons and, you know, kind of keep that ethical standard that we want everybody to, and that we know a lot of people do. And I, you know, I think that's one of the things. There's always some bad apples, but for the most part, you know, I've been pretty blessed to work with some really wonderful people in this industry. And, you know, I want to highlight those as well. So definitely appreciate it.
That's the future of the industry, is a combination of small companies and ethical players. And if you can keep a certain percentage of people doing that, then the industry can't fail.
Agreed. Absolutely. Well, I think on that note, we're going to have to wrap up. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We definitely appreciate you for coming in for another episode. And hopefully, you know, Nathan and those pesky airplanes, we'll make sure that he's here for the next one. Or you know what, Andy, you know, you and I have fun doing it. We're fine. Who needs Nathan? No, just kidding. Yeah, not Nathan Schmathan. Whatever. We'll find him. No, really, thank you very much. And I hope everybody had a wonderful holiday. And we will see you for the next episode of Jet Blast.